say that I've spent two full days on the road, been in every corner of the state, and very, very encouraged by the early reception to our property tax proposal, and by the enthusiastic reception among many members of the legislature, and certainly an open stance. I want to thank Speaker Bauer in particular for taking a constructive attitude. We had a good talk on both Tuesday and again on Wednesday, and he says he believes we can get something done. We'll be visiting regularly about that. Good questions being asked, and I know you'll have some too, but that's the kind of open conversation we meant to touch off. So very, very uplifted by the first few days.
Can you talk about why you think the sales tax is the appropriate way to go?
Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's the choice Indiana has made in the past three times for reducing property taxes. And among the alternatives, I think it is the fairest and the economically the wisest. In particular, I would not support an increase in the income tax, which is the tax on workers, on small business, on investment, on initiative, on the things we need more of to grow our economy. And a sales tax is a tax on consumption is to an extent it is voluntary. So there's no ideal answer. There is no free lunch here. But having examined all the alternatives, I think it is the best. And I will say that there's good evidence that Hoosiers agree with that.
Are you concerned at all about the federal tax liability? Obviously, I can write off my property taxes, yeah. But I can't write off sales taxes.
Well, for those who are well off enough to itemize, it means there'll be slightly less of a savings than there would be. But please remember that in trying to bring down property taxes, our first concern is people on fixed incomes or moderate incomes who have a property tax bill that they may not be able to afford. And many of those people are not itemizing, so this isn't an issue at all.
Could you think about some of the exemptions on the property, on the income tax, or I'm sorry, sales tax, some of the areas of the services and those kind of things?
You mean broadening the?
Yes.
I did look at that, and since it would not be necessary in order to effect the change that I'm recommending, I decided against that. You know, it's one of those questions that has been raised before in the legislature, and somebody might want to explore that as an alternative, but having looked at it, I ruled it out as neither particularly wise nor necessary.
Can you address some of the resistance you've heard from the business community so far, particularly at the 3% cap versus the 1% for homeowners?
Yeah. I think they're wrong. I mean, first of all, I have no problem favoring homeowners. I want to do that. I want our basic law, our Constitution, to establish this as a matter of fairness, that there's something special about home ownership. We want to protect it and promote it. So I have no problem providing a lower cap for homeowners than for business properties. Secondly, business will be no worse off under this plan. It's exactly what they have today. And as structured, they're protected against costs being shifted to them. They should be very happy about real spending limits at the local level. This has been driving property taxes up for everybody, and they've called for that in the past. I'll tell you this. I've seen a lot of business people in the last 3 days, and their lobbyists may say one thing, but I've seen chamber presidents and small business people, and they are very enthusiastic. What lobbyists for various special interests say and what their members actually think, not always synonymous.
Governor Speaker Bauer questions the need for a constitutional amendment to keep those caps in place.
Yeah.
Are you concerned that a lawsuit could undo legislation?
Well, I hope to persuade the Speaker. It's a legitimate question, by the way. I don't think we should ever lightly change our Constitution, but we should. When the situation calls for it, we've amended it six times in the last decade, and some of those changes were, in my mind, not as important as protecting people's home ownership. So I hope to persuade him, first of all, that we want to make this permanent. I was not there, but he was there for previous attempts that unraveled over time, And I would like to establish this protection, this insurance policy of 1% for the long-term future. Secondly, a second good reason is it would resolve any constitutional question that might be there. So an amendment would protect homeowners against future politicians undoing the cap and against some court undoing the cap.
How much of a concern is it to have the hyacinth type of the hyacinth nation, sales tax, and higher rent to neighbors? Could you look at the possible effect of business from that?
Sure. We always look at our competitive position. Indiana's competitive position is strong and getting stronger. That's why we have the lowest unemployment in the Midwest. That's why we have the lowest unemployment in 6 years. All the rankings of business climate have improved, and we're very careful about that. But our at the new level, our sales tax would be right about where our neighboring states are, right about the national norm. And by the way, those neighboring states allow localities to add on sales tax, and we don't. So when you compare, for instance, sales tax at 7% versus in Northwest Indiana versus Chicago, they're much higher.
After taking the tour, talking to so many people, what do you perceive at this point to be the biggest problem, the biggest hurdle, the biggest question in your mind about getting this through the legislature?
I think it's a little too soon to know which questions will be the most difficult. I do think that we'll have to work hard to make sure that real spending limits and accountability is established at the local level. This is new. The idea that somebody has to take the duty to add up the bill and to in a given county and to trim budgets, if necessary, to protect taxpayers. I think that it's only human nature. Folks would like to avoid that responsibility the way the system has permitted in the past. But we just can't go on with a situation in which counties I visited, sometimes over 80 units with the power to tax, and nobody taking the responsibility to look at that total and say, oops, too high, have to make some adjustments and priorities here.
Is there any reason to believe that this will lead to higher local income taxes in at least some counties?
I would leave that flexibility there for local circumstances, but the first response should be, at last, to bring spending down. And if you do that, that's the best protection against any other revenue source being needed.
California and Colorado have done spending cap, property tax caps, and have found that they have difficulty raising the money that they need to get things done. Are you concerned at all that these caps would be too tight, the local governments wouldn't be able to trim low enough to get there?
No, I'm not. Certainly not today. And I just think that it's appropriate as a permanent feature of life in Indiana to protect people in their homes, as a 1% cap would. That leaves a wide array of possibilities in the years to come if circumstances require, truly require, more money for something. There are a lot of other places to get it other than endangering people's right to keep the home that they worked so hard to buy.
Why does legislative action need to be fast-tracked?
Well, I think this problem's urgent. I want to see the first relief arrive next spring on the May bill. But I do think there's time for the reflection and the good debate and the improvements that ought to be part of this. If we start soon, and there seems to be spirit for that, and if the legislature makes this job one, as they must for the short session, I think there's time to do this carefully and do it well.
Governor, in the months after the session, yourself and legislative leaders advocated counties to impose income taxes for property tax relief. This plan, you're saying sales tax is the best option. What's the difference, I guess? What made you to change from income to sales for your plan?
Well, once again, I think the local option, the local flexibility and control should remain. But in the interim, while we looked at all the options for the state to come to the rescue, it seemed appropriate to the speaker and to me too to point out that here was a tool that was in their hands right then. Some counties used it and cut property taxes dramatically when they did. But now, having gone through a 3 or 4 month process, looking at all the ways the state could participate, I've come out where I have. I think these things are complementary, really, and not inconsistent.
Trying to see how some of the stuff fits together. Mm-hmm. For instance, if I'm at the 1% cap, can I just vote willy-nilly for construction projects and never have to pay any of it?
Not necessarily. Those might necessitate a local option income in a specific case. These questions, I did get questions this week about the referendum idea. But I feel strongly that it's appropriate. And I trust the people of Indiana to make balanced and thoughtful decisions about what is necessary to make their communities better and what isn't. And what's an appropriate size for the new municipal building and what's too much. And by the way, I think that a straight referendum process, which exists in many states, would be more clear and clean than the sort of clunky petition remonstrance business of today, and also quicker in many cases.
Why do you think school officials have resisted the referendum idea so much?
Well, everybody'd like to have an open checkbook. But we know, factually, that this is number one, that debt, three-quarters of which is school debt, is the number one driver of rising property taxes statewide. Number two, we have been spending 50% more on school projects than the national average. We have been building them bigger and more ornate, more per square foot. We need to be a little more careful about that. But listen, the public in Indiana reveres education. They want quality facilities for our children. And again, I trust them, and I would hope that local officials and school officials and library boards and others would trust their fellow citizens too. If they make a good case for a new borrowing imposed on taxpayers, taxpayers will say okay.
Governor, have you gotten any federal information back yet on how the special reassessment's going and if these reassessments are going to have any significant effect on the tax bills property owners are looking at right now and waiting to settle up in April?
No, I don't know yet. Except I said at the outset and on every occasion that this would only be a small part of the solution. Now, where assessment was poorly done or even ducked altogether, it should be done because in some cases, if even a dollar was shifted from business to a homeowner, that's unfair and should be undone. But nobody ever said this would be more than a small part of the solution, and we've now presented a plan that I think goes to the heart of both immediate and far-reaching and long-term relief.
Another question about the caps. Mm-hmm. You said you have no problem showing a preference for homeowners and homeownership. Some people have raised the issue of whether that fits with the equitable requirement. Can you talk a bit about how that fits in there? I know that there are some caps in existence now.
Mm-hmm. Well, once again, I don't know what a court would find about our current Constitution and the caps that are in statute today or the lower caps that I'm recommending. But I'd like to make it clear for all time, as I said, that there are two good reasons, I think, to place this new protection for homeowners in the Constitution. One, to prevent future legislative politicians from undoing it, two, to prevent a court from undoing it, and I hope to be persuasive with legislators on that point. Mm-hmm. Well, there are a lot of people who need to buy in, but we've already started lots and lots of individual conversations. I had a lot of them this week with legislators and mayors and others who came out to the events that we had. We'll be doing, I'm sure, countless visits like that. I want to continue visiting, as we did the last 4 months, with representatives of agriculture and business and local government and schools and so forth, gathering their reactions and, I hope, constructive suggestions to improve on our framework. And I'll spend a lot of time visiting with our fellow citizens about this. There's a lot for us all to learn and think about. And as I said the other night, if the public will help with their encouragement to legislators and their own good ideas, we can get this done and be in a very much better situation by February or March.
How much of the state surplus are you putting into this plan?
Well, the plan as proposed is about $100 million a year. And so it's a meaningful contribution. We have to be careful about this. 3 years ago, the state was flat broke. We have come a long way. We're in balance. We're paying down the last of the debt this year. And we do have a surplus. I think it's appropriate to return some of that surplus to taxpayers, but we want to be careful about it because we do. I don't ever want the state again. I don't want any of my successors or whoever comes next to inherit a difficult situation. I want them to have a little rainy day fund for those inevitable ups and downs.
Are you satisfied that in addition we would have the money to buy the levies, but are you concerned about putting the state in a position to take on that growth in the future, specifically the welfare levies have grown?
That's right. There's no question this is a challenge. This is why local officials for so long have pleaded to have these levies lifted from them, because they have tended to grow quickly. But that's what occupants of this office are for. That's what legislative leadership is for establishing priorities. I'll tell you this, education and the protection of children will always be at the top of my list, and I think most legislators. If that means in the future that we have to be even more careful about lower priorities, then that's what will happen. But we just prove we can do this. And I would say this also to local officials who are nervous about a new era of actually limiting the total. We just took state spending growth from 6+ down to 2. And it's not easy, but it can be done. And it can be done in the future, even with these new challenges.
Governor, the concerns of schools, the business community were already mentioned. You have 1,100 assessors who probably like to keep their job.
Yeah.
How do you go about conquering the people who want to keep the status quo? David Long mentioned doing about 10 different bills. Does that kind of help you kind of divide and conquer all the different?
Well, I don't know about the legislative, and I defer to the legislators on the proper mechanics. I don't know about that. I'll just say that the complaints of special interests were as predictable as the sunrise. And we'll hear more. But I'll tell you, even in the case of assessors, just like business and local officials and others, I saw a lot of them this week. And I've heard from a lot of them over time. And many of them said, you know what, this ought to change. This ought to change. By the way, I would predict that if we made this change and professionalized assessment, under one qualified person per county, many of today's assessors would be appointed to those jobs where they really do fit the job description and the qualifications. But the special interest will always be with us, and we'll just have to appeal to the public interest. I do believe that the public in general strongly favors a change in the current system that produces greater fairness and consistency and accuracy, and I hope the legislature will agree.
Can you tell us a little about the process you used to develop this plan? There's been some of the affected parties a little critical. They may not have been involved as much as they'd like, which I'm sure you might provide any plan to develop. But can you tell us about the process you used to come up with this? How long it took?
Who in particular complained?
Oh, Child Welfare Advocates for one group from the group.
We spend a lot of time with child welfare advocates, and I think, as you know, we've been getting awards from them for improving the protection of children in Indiana, so they know our hearts are in the right place. Well, it was a very intensive process. I won't say I've done nothing else the last 4 months, but it's hard to remember what it was because this was the dominant issue. Tons of time spent internally trying to understand the facts, the numbers, the causes of the problem, tons of time spent with representatives of various interests, including some who have been out criticizing the plan this week. It's not that we didn't listen to them, some of these business lobbyists, for instance, just that we don't happen to agree at the end of the day with everything they think. Lots of travel, lots of meetings with local officials, school principals, that is the members of these organizations, and lots of looking at other states. You know, Indiana, even today, does not have the highest property taxes or close to it. Now, we're headed in the wrong direction, and we better act, or one day we would. But there was a lot to learn from the attempts of other states and the some of the mistakes they made. So we looked at Indiana's past attempts and how could we improve on that, and at other states. And so I guess those were the main categories. And Becky, I'm glad we didn't keep a clock on it, because
Governor Senator Long mentioned another constitutional amendment that he will be introducing as copies to protect churches or property owners, and he said that you would be supportive of that. I just wondered.
I think it's a good idea. I would expect to support it. I'm sure it's the first of many constructive additions or modifications, and a well-constructed amendment like that, I think, is probably very appropriate.
You said you concluded that an income tax increase would not be appropriate. Senator Young rolled out a plan to add higher tax brackets as opposed to just a straight tax increase. Is that a viable alternative?
No. Completely against it. Because a low flat income tax is the best way to encourage small business and work and investment and the things we need badly in this state. And it's also right now a point of competitive advantage. When we're out courting new business to come to this state, this is a major advantage, and I don't want to forfeit it. So honest people can differ, but I've already given you my reasons, which I do believe most Hoosiers agree with, by the way, for thinking that if we're going to do something to slash property taxes, the sales tax is the fairer and smarter way to go.
Governor, the Assessors Association in the state, I don't know the exact title, but said they've been working on a plan for last year to kind of redefine things, and then had dropped a copy to you, and it, for the last year, been trying to get a meeting with you or someone on your staff, and haven't had any luck. Feels shut out. Does that sound accurate to you?
I don't know about their lobbyists. I've certainly seen a ton of assessors. I do in the normal course of business because I travel so much, and I certainly have in the last few months. But be more than happy to give it a look. But once again, I just reviewing the unfairness that we've seen in the. And the just stepping back and asking yourself, how can you expect accuracy and consistency and fairness with 1,100 people, many of them completely untrained to do this, trying to make these complicated decisions? You know, even if we make if we fully professionalize assessment, we'll never have a perfect system because human judgment's involved. But what we're doing today is so far from ideal, and I think the record shows it. And that's why I went ahead with the proposal. I want to say I called, among other many other people, Joe, Governor Kernan, and Chief Justice Shepard on Tuesday, talked about where I'd come out. And in a way, I apologized for stepping into the structural question in this one respect of assessment. But I said I hope they didn't mind, because I found it so bound up with the question of how we get a good property tax system that I didn't think we should wait. So all the other questions, including this one about structure and how much of this and how many of that we need, we'll wait on their report. But I just thought the unfairness of what we have today was so clear that a real property tax relief plan had to speak to it.
Back on the property team in Colorado experiences, you said you did look at other states. Did they do their counts wrong, or has it been a lack of will by the taxing entities and how they do their budgets? What sets this proposal apart from what they do?
I hope there's more flexibility in this one. We're just trying to establish a very simple matter, I think, of justice. No Hoosier should be charged more than a penny on the dollar per year for the home that they live in. And we're trying, as this conversation reflected, to leave lots of flexibility in the system. You can go beyond the spending cap by vote of the people. You can still have recourse to local option. In fact, I'd certainly be willing to consider, as I've offered up in the past, more options for localities to balance their revenue sources. So I hope that's one lesson we learn.
Governor, property taxes in Marion County appear to push the mayor's race a lot closer than a lot of people thought it was. Do you see yourself, any other better-known Republicans, campaigning for Mr. Ballard in the last days of the campaign?
Well, he seems to be doing pretty well for himself from what I hear and read. And I think that he's handled himself pretty well. I think Colonel Ballard has presented himself as a credible and thoughtful person. And I think that he probably deserves some credit. If, in fact, you have a competitive race now, I'd give him a lot of credit for bringing that about. All right, thanks. Thanks a lot.